I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by Itoen, the leading green tea company and makers of Oi Ocha, Japan's number one selling green tea. For more information, visit itoen.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Jirobi from A Tribe Called Quest / Eats Rhymes in Life, and you're here listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Zach Mangan, who is the co-founder of Kettle, the Japanese tea importer and distributor based in Fukuoka, Japan, and in New York. And there are many tea merchants in New York, but Zach's passion and love for Japanese tea seems very personal, and Japanese tea represents his lifestyle. So we'll talk about how Zach got into Japanese tea, his powerful network of farmers and tea blenders in Japan, and how to make the best green tea and more. Hello, Zach. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I know that you're formerly trained as a jazz musician. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into Japanese tea?
Good question. Yeah, you're right. I grew up playing music and went to college for music, and shortly after moving to New York...
You went to Berkeley.
I did, yeah. Yeah, I studied music, jazz performance at Berkeley in Boston. Mm. And yeah, I moved to New York. I needed a job. I didn't have many gigs lined up that would pay my rent. So I had been fascinated by green tea at that point, probably for about 2 years. I just on my own as a hobby, drinking it and kind of learning more about it. My mind tends to try and get deep into things. So if I like something, it tends to become a hobby and then a passion. So I needed to find some work. So I ended up finding a job at a tea store in Manhattan. And from there, just used it as a part-time job, but also as an opportunity to learn more. Mm. And so it goes. I just kept going and going and going. And then, you know, a few interesting opportunities happened that I was able to go to Japan. And from there, really, decided I wanted to do this as a profession and not just as an interest.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah. What was the first tea experience?
So growing up, I always, you know, my family are pretty much coffee drinkers, but we always had tea at home. And I just personally never took to coffee. I never found the palate for it. From a kid, I would just drink tea. I was always drinking tea at home and restaurants. I'd order tea. And, you know, I think part of that was it was always very normal to me. So, like I said, as I got older, I saw friends and getting into wine and getting into, you know, coffee and telling me all these interesting facts. And I didn't really have anything that I want something, you know. So I was like, well, I like tea. So I started going to Whole Foods and just, you know, buying like tea bags and then loose tea. Then it was actually on a trip when I was in college. I was in Paris and I went into a tea shop. And it was the first time that I really had the experience of like, wow, there's different varieties. There's of the same, you know, type of tea, and there's different examples in different countries, and that immediately I was kind of hooked from there.
It's like a Pandora's box.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it really was and still is. And, you know, from then I came back to Boston at that time and started going to tea shops in Boston, and then really once I came to New York is when it kind of solidified into a kind of career move.
Right.
Yeah.
So I heard that you were at the Kai restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the tea shop.
Yeah. So actually, side. Ito and...
You happen to be our sponsor today.
Yeah, I know. They're kind of, this is good press for them. So, you know, I do have a lot of gratitude for them because it was an Ito and owned the tea store that was below Kai restaurant, which is unfortunately not there anymore. It was a wonderful kaiseki restaurant. And, you know, working directly for a Japanese company not only gave me a glimpse of the tea, but more like the culture of Japan, the ceramics, the ceramics buyer who worked for them is still a good friend of mine. And I felt like it was a very authentic view into Japan, and also the corporate culture, the work culture, the way you greet each other in the morning, you know, learning how to say good morning in Japanese. All those things were very authentic and kind of, I think, were part of what pushed me into wanting to go deeper into Japanese tea.
So you studied at the right place, I think.
Yeah, no, I was, it's funny because there's my parents at the time, it was between working there and working at Whole Foods, and Whole Foods had health insurance, and my parents were like, you know, you should choose what you want to do, but this health insurance sounds really good. Like, and they were kind of pushing me into that direction. And finally I said, you know, I'm sorry. I'm more interested in this other job. So I ended up working at Ito-en, and to this day, they're always like, we're glad he didn't listen to us because, you know, we wanted him to work at Whole Foods. So,
right. So now a business owner.
Yeah.
So. Right. So tell us some more about, you know, how you started the Kettle Tea Company, because I heard you happened to meet two men from
Japan. It's a pretty wild story. So I was at the time working at the shop, and two customers came in. They were tourists visiting from Japan, and just really nice guys. Their English, you know, was limited, but you could tell they wanted to talk, they wanted to connect. So I just, you know, there was a quiet moment in the shop, so we started talking, and I realized, oh, I should serve some tea to them. But this is maybe against the rules of the tea shop, but I had some personal tea someone had brought for me, and I really was enjoying drinking it, so I made it for them. And immediately their eyes lit up. They're like, where is this tea from? And I gave them the package. Everything was in Japanese. And they were like, okay, yeah, this is from Fukuoka. We can tell. We know that taste.
Oh, wow.
They ended up telling me, oh, we're from Fukuoka, and we know where this tea farm is. So here's our business card if you ever come. It's a very Japanese, like a gesture of not only pride that, you know, I was drinking a product where they're from, but also a gesture of like just kindness. Like, we'd really like to show you this place.
Right.
So they gave me their business card, and 6 months later, I ended up going to Japan to play a music festival, and I emailed them, and they responded, and oh, we remember you. Yeah, please come to Fukuoka. I didn't know where Fukuoka was. I was in Tokyo, so I looked on on the map, and I was like, wow, that's far away. But anyway, I took a leap. I took the bullet train down and met them. And not only did they show up, but they have a business in Japan, an IT business. They closed for the day, and they brought all the employees from the company. So 15 people showed up, and everyone had a small bag with a gift in it, and they were happy, you know, welcome to Fukuoka, thank you for coming. I was just blown away. I'd never had that type of hospitality before.
Right, but kind of like you initiated here, right?
Yeah. I guess it was a return on my making the cup of tea for them, just they did it on a whole nother level. So they showed up, and they rented two of these large vans, and everyone from the company, including me, went to this farm.
Wow.
And we get there, and they introduced me to this gentleman, and they said, this is the guy that actually grew the tea leaves you brewed for us when we were in New York. And I was so shocked. I thought I was just going to be in the same region, but they literally took me to the place, the farm, where this tea was.
That's like an epiphany, like the destiny.
Yeah, and I had spent zero, you know, no time at all at a tea farm at this point, so I was really taken by the landscape, by the, you know, how clean and fresh everything was, and obviously the tea, when you drink it at source with the water from the area, they use the same water to brew the tea, and the quality is so fresh. I knew this was like the greatest thing I'd ever had in my life, and immediately I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to try and get this exact product back to the United States. So just to wrap it up, shortly after I went back to New York, and I realized that's what I kind of wanted to do, and I reached out to these two guys, and I was like, hey, thank you so much for the trip. Would you want to start a business with me bringing this tea in? And the irony is they were actually doing a little bit of market research in New York. That's why they came to the tea shop, because they were considering if they ever wanted to start a second business, maybe tea would be something they wanted to do. So 6 years later, we have this company, and that's that's how it started.
Gold Sun working.
Yeah, it's a little, when you tell the story, it's hard to believe, but I couldn't even make that up if I tried. It really happened.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so the Fukuoka is a Kyushu, and it's very, Kyushu also is a good region to grow tea.
Yes.
One of the famous. We'll talk about it later, but yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you opened, you started Kettle Tea in 2011, right? So what is special about Kettle Tea compared to other green tea merchants?
Well, from the beginning, my guiding principle really was just about taste. You know, like we work with producers throughout the country. So we are based in Kyushu and Fukuoka, but we work with tea makers and manufacturers from all over Kyushu, as well as other parts of mainland Japan.
And right. So you mean the farmers and the processors,
right? So right. I can explain a little bit later or now how that differs, because there usually is more than one person involved in making the tea. But we do work throughout the country. But you know, we're really interested, even if the teas taste very different, like delicious tea. So I wanted to, from the beginning, focus on high quality products and packaging, making sure that the teas are taken care of after they're harvested. So oxygen-free packaging, air shipping, keeping everything in refrigeration, all of those elements lead to the customer opening the tea and it being in as close to the state as it left the farm.
Okay. You know? Yeah. Right. Okay. And then you have what kind of network do you have?
Yeah, so we work with right now 10 different either farmers or producers. And how that differs, I'll explain a little bit. Mm-hmm. Generally, a farmer will grow the product. So they'll grow the raw leaves, right, and then they will take it to an auction. Excuse me. And they will those leaves will be bid on by a producer. That producer will buy the raw product, take it to the factory, and manufacture it.
Right. It's like a coffee beans.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. And more often than not, when you drink a tea, you're drinking several farmers' leaves mixed together, blended together by that producer.
Right.
We do work with some small farmers who also have manufacturing capabilities. They have a factory behind their farm, and they do the whole process themselves.
Right. It's like estate wine,
exactly,
kind of.
Exactly, yeah. Usually much smaller crop size and more unique, sometimes a single varietal of the tea. It's unblended. So we work with a combination of large manufacturers and small farmers as well. And we're, you know, there's an idea that just the super small farmer is the only person making great tea or wine or coffee. But in fact, in Japan, some of the larger producers, because they have the technological advantage and the resources, are making fantastic teas, as well as, you know, the ninth generation guy making it in his backyard. So we're really open to both of those.
Right. Because you have to have a teapot in Japan. Every single family has a teapot.
Yeah,
so it's a part of the culture.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I understand that you sell tea to per se, to John George, Atera, Brushstroke, Mission Chinese, Chef's Table at Brooklyn Fair, and they're all super high-end and popular restaurants. That's very impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've been very lucky. We're really fortunate to have fantastic clients and friends. You know, after we've worked together with a lot of those restaurants for many years. They're like, you know, we depend on them and they depend on us. But we really value our restaurant relationship specifically because they're our best marketing. You know, we teach them how to make the tea and they care about it, and they night after night introduce products to the customers in the best way possible. A diner who's out for a meal is so receptive to what's being told to them by the server. So it's like the ultimate time to, you know, plug the tea and to talk about the tea and to show them what they're enjoying and how you know, how to think about the flavors and explain where it's from. And people just are really like, it's a powerful time to show tea to the customer.
Right, but before you get there, you know, you have to convince the restaurants, like, you know, but how did you do that?
Well, this is funny. The first restaurant I ever worked, I mean, for 6 months, we were a quote company. We had no customers. We just had a tea and a bunch of packaging that we were trying to figure out. And I remember I was in a park. And I just was like, all right, I got to get one customer. I got to just figure out how to get one customer, and then we can be a business. So I just called Brushstroke. I knew about the restaurant, and I'd heard great things about it, and I knew they had a tea program.
Right.
So I literally picked up the phone and called them, and another stroke of luck, the right person picked up, and Keiko-san is her name. She's still with the organization. She picked up the phone and said, "Hi, I really didn't expect anybody to answer." So I was like, "Excuse me. My name is Zach. I'm importing tea from Fukuoka." And she's like, "Oh, really? The chef's from Kyushu. He might be interested. Come tomorrow." Ah. And she hung up. And I was like, "Oh my god!" So I went and bought a nice shirt and got I really wasn't expecting to go to this meeting. The next day I went. They tasted the teas and they were so open. They didn't care that I didn't have any other customers. They're just like, "We want your product. We like it." So that was my first customer.
Amazing.
And then word of mouth and also some hustling and running around trying to meet people. And
well, it sounds like you have really good luck carrying around with this.
Yeah,
business.
I'm gonna knock on wood.
So the listeners who doesn't know too much about Brushstroke, that's David Boulay, Boulay's restaurant in Tribeca, and then very high end.
Yeah, David is a fantastic chef and a really interesting person, and he's beyond interested in tea. He's a he really only drinks Japanese green tea, and he's really passionate about it. And anyone who remotely works in Japanese tea in this city has a relationship with David Boulay, because he's a big fan and supporter, and he's really just an interesting, wonderful guy, and has been really great to us.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
And then everything started to the
from there line. It was little by little, and it's slow. Japanese tea is still finding its footing in the United States. So it's a little bit farther along in Europe, definitely in Asia. But, with a company like this, it's not a startup where you're trying to rev it right away and hit huge revenue. You got to kind of slowly build it and piece by piece, build your relationships, take your time with it. And, it's starting to pay dividends now and develop in that we've been doing it for a while. But, like any artisanal product, especially in a new environment like New York, where maybe there's not a history of tea like in other, cultures or countries, it takes time. So you can't be in a rush. You kind of have to be in it for the long run.
Okay. So I'm curious, what kind of farms or, I want to hear about that kind of artisanal story about one of the aerial network.
Sure. So as I mentioned, right now it's about 10, depending on the season, maybe more, maybe less. And we have some fantastic producers. One of them, this is a great story. So Japan produces 99% green tea. So other countries, China, Taiwan, India, generally produce more than one style of tea, black tea, oolong. But Japan is really a green tea country. But seeing the market for other types of teas, one of our producers took a research trip to Taiwan and fell in love with Taiwanese style oolong, and convinced his dad, who's the boss, shacho, they say in Japan, boss, convinced his dad to buy some equipment to try and make their own oolong. So he single-handedly started after work. So in Japan, as you well know, it's a long work day. You start early, you work late. And his kind of way to blow off steam at night was to go and start messing around with these machines and trying to figure out how to make something that wasn't green tea. And he took a specific varietal that he thought would work well. He, did his best to learn. And now 5 years later, he's making remarkably good.
Wow.
You could put it in front of someone who knows Taiwanese tea very well, and they are stumped when you say it's not from Taiwan.
Right.
And his level of skill and expertise in Japanese tea has really carried him into creating something really unique, and he's also doing the same with black tea. He went to India, and now he's back, and he's making really surprisingly accurate Indian-style black tea.
So how many generations is he?
So he's relatively young. He's fourth generation.
Okay.
So but we have a couple. One of our good friends is ninth generation, seventh. It's really, it carries from father to the son. And we do have some interesting, it's really fun to see when a daughter takes over, because maybe there isn't a son, or maybe the son isn't interested. We just met about 2.5 weeks ago. We were in Uji, right outside of Kyoto, and we met with this wonderful woman who's, the baton has been passed to her, and she's now producing tea. And it's kind of still a unique position in Japan, as generally it's passed through the male side of the family, but she's confident and she's making great tea, so we're excited.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. So sounds like a traditional beverage kind of advanced by new generation.
Yeah, I think that unfortunately in Japan green tea, like loose leaf green tea, is in pretty deep decline. It's moved on to the pet bottle style. The bottled tea is doing well, but not a lot of people are drinking tea, so it's kind of given them a shake up, you know. Producers have to find new ways to attract customers and think a little bit outside of the box. And one of those ways, and good for us, is kind of been, you know, partnering with people who are moving the product out of the country. Where still today, you know, most of the product that is of high quality stays in the domestic market. But little by little, we're able to kind of start moving it out and introducing it to a new audience, which benefits them for sure.
Right. So it sounds like, because you have to make tea at home with, you know, the loose leaf too. So that's a step. You have to have added value. So that's what new generation is trying to.
Exactly.
Okay. So what types of tea do you carry?
So everything that the one unique thing about the company is it's all from Japan. So every product that we source comes from somewhere in Japan, where a lot of companies, you know, source from many different countries. Right now on our menu, it's primarily green tea. So green tea is several different categories. The most straightforward would be sencha. Sencha is kind of a basic style of picked and steamed green tea. So we carry that. We carry gyokuro, which is a shaded tea. It's grown under
Like last couple months they grow.
So right before, about 3 weeks before they harvest it, they cover it with kind of a reed netting and then straw on top of that to block the sunlight, and it affects the flavor of the tea.
I heard it's more like delicate and more nutrition.
So it amplifies certain elements of the flavor, one being umami, or richness. So the richness, the rich flavor, really, it's remarkable when you taste it. Most people who have never had gyokuro drink it for the first time and they're like, what is this? This does not taste like tea. It's sweet, it's very rich, it's almost broth like. So that's a category that we're really excited to be able to share, because there's not a lot of in our opinion, not a lot of great examples of that being brought out of Japan. Then, you know, we have matcha, which is, you know, I think most people at this point have had some experience with matcha. It's the powdered version of green tea. It's ground into a fine powder.
But also that's grown at the last couple months-ish under the shade.
Very similar to gyokuro. They're covered, and then the difference being they're ground up in a stone mill into a powder and then whisked, not brewed like a traditional tea. And then we also have some interesting things like soba, soba cha from Nagano, which
buckwheat.
Is actually, not a tea, but it's a buckwheat grain that we have steeped in an oolong, a black tea. So really, we have in terms of Japanese tea, we have a pretty wide variety.
Well, buckwheat tea, people don't know much about it, but it's like a very distinctive flavor. And I think it's refreshing and doesn't have much caffeine.
Zero caffeine. It's actually become it's the number two best-selling product we have. And one of the things about it that's kind of fascinating to me is when people drink it, it's not a flavor that they're maybe have had any experience with, but they feel a sense of connection to it. Like a lot of people say it's very comforting. Like, and I had that experience when I drank it. I'd never had really soba cha before, but immediately it was like an instinct. Like, oh, this feels similar. Like, I feel like I've had this before, but maybe it tastes like a food. A lot of people that grew up having like kasha, that type of cooked grain, they have some connection to it that way.
And but something like, I wouldn't say like a mint, but it's something refreshing. But I never succeeded in how to describe it. It's such a
It's toasty, nutty, a little bit. It's very aromatic, I think, but it's very light on the palate and sweet. And the one that we source is actually roasted by hand. So it's it's the sweetness and the sugar in the buckwheat actually kind of comes out when you do it.
Oh, wow. And buckwheat is so nutritious too.
Very.
Okay, and so now actually we are tasting this new shincha, which you just brought back from Japan after 3 weeks of a trip. So maybe you can talk about what shincha is and what's special.
Sure. So shincha is a big deal in Japan. It's the shin means new, so it's new, and tea, cha is tea. So shincha really means the fresh crop. So on a big macro view, it's the first picked tea of the year, but it's celebrated like many things in Japanese cuisine. It's hyper seasonal, so it's really only available in Japan for about 6 to 8 weeks, and then it's gone. It's
like Beaujolais nouveau kind.
Exactly, it's the Beaujolais of tea, and it's usually light, refreshing. It's not as complex as some of the teas you're going to have later in the year, but it's a kind of a look at what to expect for the teas, kind of the characteristics of the teas for the year. And The good news is this year it's excellent, and everyone's really, they kind of say every year the tea is going to be good, but the people who haven't said it in the past to me are like, really, seriously, this year is a very good year for tea. So it's a great, it's just fun to drink because it's only around for a little while, and ours was harvested. We have three. One was harvested April 14th from Kagoshima, which is kind of the first area to release their teas because it becomes warm there and then moves up. We have Yame, which you're drinking now. That was April 28th. And then one from Nagasaki, which was May 10th. Wow. So that just got released. Yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the color is amazingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there's like, you know, it's bitter, but it's a sweet burst in my mouth.
These are very, very sweet. Yame in particular is known to be very sweet. It has a lot of body, and I think the freshness is what's really the most important characteristic of these teas.
Right. Well, actually, I posted a message about this episode on my Facebook to promote the show, and then a listener asked a question. So, does Japan have a fermented tea similar to Chinese pu'er?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the answer?
It is. They do. It's a special tea that comes from Shikoku, from the island of Shikoku, and it's a... There's the term fermentation is kind of widely misused in tea. When people talk about oxidation, which is when tea leaves turn brown, when they turn from green tea and you let them sit, like if you cut an apple and you hold it in the air, it'll turn brown over time. So black tea is actually oxidized, but fermented tea, where there's actually a fermentation process happening, is really only confined to pu'er, which is a Chinese style tea from southern part of China. But they started making one in Shikoku, and it's a very interesting tea. We don't sell it. it's very unique. It's got a kind of a full-bodied flavor, a little bit funky. I think fermented teas are quite funky.
Yeah, I heard it's like there's lactic acid in it.
Yeah, so they use a catalyst, basically. They use they insert the tea, the raw tea leaf with a kind of an enzyme that produces this fermentation process.
Right. So I heard it's goishi cha.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And so I think there is it's known now as a good diet tea, the health benefit, because it can improve metabolism, works for constipation, improve skin condition, slow aging, whatever.
whatever you want to tack on there, it'll do that too.
Right. Yeah. But anyways, so there is something similar to
So one thing you'll notice one of the things I think chefs and people in food and beverage love about Japan is it's so local. That you could not know about something and then drop by this small town and they're like, oh, we make this here. Like, it's only in our prefecture or in our area of Japan. So this is a very, that style of tea is really confined to Shikoku. They're not making it in many other places. So that's what's so fun about Japan is depending, you may have visited several places, then you go to a new one and you discover some fascinating new tea that you didn't know was there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about Japanese tea terroir. So please stay with us.
Itoen, the leading green tea company and makers of Oi Ocha, Japan's number one selling green tea, offers an array of award-winning ready-to-drink teas, premium tea leaves, tea bags, and antioxidant matcha powder. From the refreshing taste of tea's tea, brewed with only the purest of teas, to matcha love, taking a modern take on an ancient ritual, Itoen celebrates the authentic tastes of Japan with their 50-plus years of tea-making expertise. For a natural energy boost, try Sencha Shot, packed with healthy catechins and vitamin C. Do visit the Matcha Love Store in the Mitsuo Marketplace located in Edgewater, New Jersey for their signature matcha ice cream and shakes. Hoji and black sesame are also a must. With a selection of delicious teas, teaware, and gift sets, Matcha Love by Itoen is not to be missed. For more information, visit itoen.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from the studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Zach Mangan, who's the co-founder of Kettle, the Japanese tea import and distributor based in Fukuoka, Japan, and New York. So we've been talking about artisanal tea products, and nowadays we all get more interested in local producers and their stories when we talk about food, coffee, wine, craft beer, and so on. But here in New York, most of us don't know much about regional differences of Japanese green tea. So could you tell us the major tea-producing regions in Japan?
Yeah, so there's over a dozen areas in Japan, maybe more, that are producing on some scale, maybe very small to very large amounts of tea. The largest, Shizuoka, is Japan's number one in terms of volume producer in the entire country. Second would be Kagoshima, which is very opposite end. So Shizuoka is just south of Tokyo, near Mount Fuji. If you go all the way to the bottom of the country, Kagoshima is the second largest producer. Then from there you go back up to Mie. Actually, Mie Prefecture is all very close to Shizuoka, producing quite a lot of tea. Yame in Fukuoka, and then Uji, which is right outside of Kyoto. Those are kind of the main areas that are producing by volume quite a lot of tea. And then all over Kyushu, there's other Saga, Miyazaki. Those places are making tea as well.
Right. So I'm sure they're so different depending on which area.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's production method is primarily very similar throughout the country in terms of the machines that they're using and the, you know, applying. But the thing that sets Japanese green tea apart from most other green teas made is that it uses steam. So when they pick the fresh leaf, in order to stabilize the leaf and keep it green and stop it from oxidizing,
instead of roasting.
Right. So in China, for example, they'd use a dry wok where they would show they would heat the leaf with this dry wok. Japan uses steam. So, almost everywhere in Japan is still using that steaming method. There's a couple of places which are really interesting. If you go to the bottom of the country, in Saga and Miyazaki, where the ports were when China sailed over to,
to
Japan.
Right,
there's still some Chinese-style teas being made there because of that leftover influence from when they were taught how to make Chinese tea from China.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. So, and I got a data. So as for the quantity, in 2014, this is the latest I got. So 767 million green tea. I mean, the pounds green tea was produced in Japan. And like it's a number one Shizuoka. And it's a premium tea. And the number two Kagoshima is mainly used for blending. So it's not the highest quality.
Yeah, well, they'll tell you. I mean, it's always a... Everyone has an opinion.
You
know? When
you
go to Kagoshima, they will tell you this is quality green tea.
Right, and
No, it's true. I mean, Shizuoka is a big place. So just starting with there's tea that's grown down very close to sea level. There's tea grown in the mountainside. The mountainside teas tend to have more of what you think of terroir, having a taste of the place. So when you go to Kawane or to Abe River area in Shizuoka, it's very small. It's very artisanal. It's very expensive. If you go down to the mainland, like Makinohara is a big production area in Shizuoka. They're making great teas, but they're also making the tea that goes into pet bottle teas or into matcha sweets or into toothpaste that has green tea. You know, like it runs the gamut. And the same goes with Kagoshima. There are producers that are making wonderful products, and there's also, you know, it's a business. So there's people making vast amounts of mediocre tea that they're going to use in, you know, some vitamin supplement or something.
Interesting. So the highest one is like a Burgundy or Bordeaux kind of veneers.
Yeah, and those by volume are very small amounts of what Japan sells. And, you know, that's what we sell. That's what we only sell. We really sell the highest quality leaves that are available. And in some ways, I think that our producers really appreciate that we're going that route, that we're saying, like, you know what, business be damned, we're going to go after great stuff, and we're going to see what sticks, and we're going to, you know, that's what we're going to sell. And they're proud of those teas. Anybody you meet who makes wonderful teas is going to, you know, be proud to showcase them and share them. So that, I think, created some goodwill between us and the producers.
Right, because, like, you know, Japanese sake, which has been, you know, sale has been tanking, and then it's come picking up because of their focus for high-end, high quality.
It's true, yeah. And I think, especially in New York, people love, you know, there's, since Jiro Dreams of Sushi or Birth of Sake, like these films that, you know, shed light on how hard people are, you know, artisans are working in Japan, specifically other countries as well, to create craft foods and beverages. It's just inspiring. And when you get to taste the real deal, it's, you know, it's totally different.
Right.
You know?
They don't do that for making money.
So. Right, yeah. And to their own detriment sometimes, they are really focused on quality and just doing it the right way. And it's sometimes the money aspect comes way down the line. And, you know, so hopefully it's in balance, though. You want them to be making enough money so that they're there next year, but you also, they don't phone it in. They are very serious about doing it the right way.
Right. No compromise.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So we talked a little bit about the production method, and I heard that there are two different kinds of methods. And even the next level or deeper level. So that's one is called the fukamushi, and the other one is called the asamushi. Mm-hmm. So what are they?
So again, talking about that steaming process, those are two levels of steaming that we use. So to get into sort of the deeper production lingo, mushi is just a steaming. It's a style of applying, you know, steam to the tea leaf. And asamushi refers to tea leaves that are steamed for a shorter amount of time, so generally under 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. Certain regions, specifically Uji, right outside Kyoto, which is a very old and traditional style tea producer, they only make primarily asamushi. So that light steaming gives it a very fresh characteristic, also a much lighter color in the cup. Mm. It's more golden to light green. Fukamushi is actually the opposite end of the spectrum. That's a deep steaming. So that's going to be about 45 seconds. And that doesn't seem like much difference, 15 seconds to 45 seconds, but it's a completely different product then. It's much deeper green in the cup, a soupier tea, and really a beautiful color, but very different tastes.
Okay, because I heard the longer you steam, you the more you lose flavor and bitterness.
Yeah, so fukamushi is very approachable in terms of, number one, the color. So when people see the color, they're, wow, that's such a beautiful green color. Mm. The reason why is that tea particles break down.
Okay.
So if it's like the tea leaf is maybe a long needle to begin with, after that much steaming, it'll break into a few pieces. Mm. Some of that sediment will pass through the strainer into the cup, so you get a really bright green. Mm. In terms of aroma, it's complicated. You may lose some there, but you can make it up in another area of the production. For example, firing or drying, you can bring aroma back into the leaf depending on how heat is applied. Not wet heat, steam, but you then use dry heat. So making tea is a mystery. It's complex, and people who do it are talented on a scale I've never seen, to be able to understand not only the year's crop, what it looks like, what it tastes like. They have to imagine, what do they need to do in these 10 processes to make it taste the same as last year? Part of that is blending. So they'll take different varietals of green tea and they'll produce them and mix them together to create a standardized taste that their customers want year after year. So if you taste, you know, Company A's Sencha in 2015, 2016, that customer expects it to taste the same way again, even though maybe they had more rain or it was cooler. And that's chashi. Mm. Chashi is generally a gentleman who works for the tea manufacturer. It's his job to understand all of the elements that go into play to make that tea consistent year after year.
Right. Wow. Well, sounds like even more complicated than winemaking.
Well, I mean, I can't speak exactly. I know winemaking is absolutely complicated as well, but it's certainly no less complicated. That's for sure. I think that if someone who appreciates craft beverages were to go to a tea farm, they would be, you know, they'd be giddy, because there's just so much, like, to learn about. And that's, you know, for me, I picked this kind of as a career choice because I didn't see much of an end in sight. The deeper you go, you know, it splits off and suddenly there's more options to learn about. So that's the fun part.
Mm. Okay. So people started to drink a lot more green tea in this country lately, and you know, I think partly because of health benefits of green tea. So maybe you can just briefly talk about the health benefits.
Sure. That's a big, broad subject for sure. We shy away from making explicit health claims about products, but it is certainly, if you look, there's numerous data showing that green tea consumption has positive effects on the body. Specifically, the most researched element is called catechin. Mm-hmm. Catechin is actually what gives tea sort of its dry, astringent, or bitter flavor. Mm. That's a component that protects the tea plant in nature. So catechin protects the plant from bugs or from pests. When you process the tea and ingest it into your body, it actually, those same processes it does for the tea plant, it does for you. So it's been shown to fight, you know, free radicals as an antioxidant. And then, you know, theanine is another element that's been shown to promote sort of general feeling of relaxation. So yeah, I would be wary of anybody that tells you it's going to, like, make you look 20 years younger or solve all of your problems or do your taxes for you or whatever they claim that it's going to do. It probably is a, you know, half of what they say, but it is certainly, specifically, if you look at population studies on Japan in terms of stomach cancer and in terms of oral and esophageal cancer, certain foods are touted as being reasons those are so low.
Right. Okay, so at least with catechin is known for antioxidants, right. And then, you know, L-theanine. Yeah.
And I think the process of drinking it, too, is has an element of relaxation and enjoyment, and that's got to be good for you, too. You
know?
If you like what you're drinking, that's got to be good for your mental state, at least.
Right, and the smell and the process is kind of very calming.
Yes.
Right, okay. And I heard that you came in third place last year at the annual All Japan Contest for Brewing Delicious Gyokuro. So
yeah, it was very interesting experience. It was a friend, actually a woman who works with us, knew about this, and it was held last year in Fukuoka, and it was people from all over the country came to, you know, partake in this. It's an industry event, so it's to promote Gyokuro consumption, but also it has this added contest where people, you know, can show up with their teaware, and they have, everyone has to use the same type of tea leaf, but they can use a different amount, they can brew it the way they want. And, you know, she asked if I wanted to do it, and I said, well, why not? So, you know, I went in with one of our producers who makes Gyokuro, and I worked on, you know, what I thought was a good method, and he showed me a few things, and I practiced, like, you know, every morning for about a week, and I really was shocked. You know, it was like each round, certain people passed through, and I just kept going, and I thought it was like a joke. And everyone did, too, because I was one of the few, you know, foreigners at this very like strange and unique competition that most people in America don't know what this tea is. So in the end, I was, you know, was obviously very happy to go into the finals, and it was just a great memory. And the fun part for me was one of our producers was there as part of the industry, and I think it was a proud moment for both of us that, you know, we were kind of recognizing together that I was serious about this and it was my passion, and I was happy to, you know, kind of do well for him, because it made, you know, it brought us a little bit closer together.
So it was probably bigger than you thought.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And it was funny. I made a little bit of money. So I took our employees. We just blew it all on a nice dinner after we went out and got some food in Fukuoka. And it was a lot of fun.
Wow. Yeah. Well, but you officially confirmed as master.
Well, somewhere. I don't know a master. I have the small apartment I stay at when I'm in Japan. I still have two framed awards there that I have to figure out how to get home sometime, but I keep them at the room there that if anyone can read Japanese, they'll be able to tell me what it says.
Okay, well, you can take a picture.
Yeah,
I'll do that.
Sure.
So the, you know, like, as we talked earlier, you sell tea at very popular high-end restaurants in New York. Mm-hmm. So how do you predict the popularity of tea in the U.S.? It's going to stay as a premium drink or something a little more casual?
Well, we do sell at a lot of premium restaurants. We also sell at cafes and, you know, to more maybe mainstream outlets. To be honest, if we're looking at a retail perspective, like, you know, we have very high-end stuff. We have, while great quality, less expensive teas as well. And we do sell a lot of both. So, you know, I think we make it easy as a gateway. If you want to get into teas, we do a great line of tea bags that we worked really hard on making sure we made great tea in the bag. And a lot of people find their way into loose tea through that. And I see it as tea. You know, tea is a story. It's learning the history, not only the history of tea in Japan, but throughout the world, and learning the stories of the people who make it. And I think that's very attractive. You know, coffee has that, wine has that, whiskey has that narrative. And it wouldn't be enough to just be a narrative. It's also delicious. You know, when people try it and they prepare it well, I think surprise is one of the biggest things we see when we have a customer taste our tea. And it's a good thing, but at the same time, you want them, you know, to develop a palate so that they can appreciate it and over time. But at first, it's like, oh my God, I didn't know green tea tastes like. I thought it was bitter. I thought it, you know, didn't have any body. A lot of coffee drinkers say, oh, it's tea's watery. And then we make tea for them and they're like, oh, like this is such a parallel experience to drinking great coffee.
Well, honestly, I had this shincha in front of me first time in a couple of years to have shincha. And I was like, wow, I forgot. This is so sweet and deep. So.
Yeah. And it's the difference of just, you know, making sure we take good care of it. So we remove all the oxygen from the packaging. We only airship. We keep it refrigerated. So by the time it gets to the customer, it's really intact. Because you can have great tea, but if it leaves on a boat and it comes 3 months later and there was, you know, it was hot underneath the boat, the tea is ruined. It doesn't matter. You know, at that point, it's gone. The flavor is gone.
So. Okay. So I understand we can get your tea on your website. That's kettletea, kettle.co. But do you also have a pop-up shop upstairs of Okonomi restaurant in Williamsburg?
Yeah, so I think you're familiar with Yuji-san. He's been on the show. He was a, you know, I've always loved what he's doing. I think he's doing great things for Japan and for America in terms of his passion for kind of creative Japanese food. And I used to just stop by with samples. I like haunted him. I'd be like, hey, I brought you some stuff. And he, to his credit, he has a vision, and what, you know, what he wants to do, he does. And at the time, tea wasn't really part of that, but I just kept kind of, you know, going by. And it ended up that I did a tea class for his staff. So I ended up just doing a quick, you know, overview of tea and a tasting, and everyone loved it. And, you know, luckily he said, hey, do you want to come back tomorrow and do a pop-up? I'm doing a pottery fair here. Why don't you come and make tea? And I've never left. So I'm there. I'm usually there on Saturdays and Sundays, but it is a pop-up. So there's some days when I might not be there doing other events. But generally speaking, from 11 to 3 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays, I'm above Okonomi. It's 150 Ainslie Street in Brooklyn. And ultimate morning, you should come. Put your name on the list at Okonomi because there's always a wait. Come upstairs, have some tea. You can talk to me. Enjoy yourself, chill, and then they'll actually come upstairs and get you, and then you can go down and have the food. So it's a great morning.
Oh, well, that's a great motivation because you have to, like you said, you have to wait. So that's perfect.
So we're actually the Okonomi waiting room, is what I say. When people come up, and they can just have tea and wait for the food.
Right. Yeah. So what's your plan
from here? So we have a lot of interesting things on the horizon. You know, working, obviously, our restaurant partners are expanding. We just met with some restaurants in California. We're starting to sell our product on the West Coast, and focusing on now for this immediate few months, we're doing some events here in New York, actually coming up on the 22nd, 22nd Sunday, from 5:30 to 10, we're doing a shincha event at Saikai Dining Bar, which is in Manhattan on Greenwich Street, with Ippodo, which is another Kyoto-based tea company. We're doing a collaborative event to feature shincha.
Oh, nice.
We're doing classes. We're doing, obviously, the pop-up and kind of expanding from that. We're going to be doing kind of some fun programming this summer around mizudashi, which is cold brew teas. Mm-hmm. So we're launching in June kind of a new... The shop experience is going to be a little different around.
It's like a cold brew coffee, the same idea.
Mm-hmm. Cold extracted,
So that kind of the information can be found at your website?
Yeah, yep, just kettle.co. And we have most of what's going on is up there, and we're bringing in new products and also getting into some new ceramics this year, which are going to be interesting.
Okay. Well, we're going to finish the show now, but before the show we were talking about you opening a jazz and green tea, like a Japanese kisaden, kind of traditional tea.
Yeah, so my background in music is, you know, it's always, for me, tea is so linked to culture, and it's so linked to art and expression that, you know, whenever I have the shop open, I'm always programming music and making sure that the tea roasting candle with the tea on top is burning so people can smell the leaves. And it's it's an interactive experience. So yeah, in the future, we're definitely looking, our plan is to have a full retail experience where it would be standalone. And that's kind of the next step for us. So we were talking earlier, about programming some jazz, either like having just a turntable and playing sides, or, you know, once a week doing music there as well, because I need to dust off the drums and play a little bit more. So maybe if I open a place where I can play, it'll do it.
Yeah, music and tea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. So yeah, you'll be there on opening day, I hope.
Okay, so listeners, if you want to invest in this Jack's new
That's
business.
Right. Yeah, you can also go to kettle.co, and with any, you can contact us if you're looking to get into the tea and jazz game. I know there's a lot of people out there with that on their list.
Right. Okay. And, well, you have to come back and talk more about those exciting things.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org, and you can sign up for our newsletter to get fun updates and event information at the bottom of our homepage. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher podcasts. Today's show was made possible by Doen, and our engineer is David Tatasciore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.